you. Thank you and welcome. Welcome, everyone. Even with all that rain outside, you've come. You've come because I know you're very interested in this human body, the human body that we all live in, and how to get the most out of it. And I thank Pastor Ray for telling us about next weekend. It's pretty exciting stuff the way Lee goes into the stars. Fascinating. But today we're going to be looking at the immune system. There's one thing and one thing only that all the experts agreed on in 2020 and 2021. And there was nothing else they agreed on, but they agreed on one thing, and that is the best way to fight disease is a good immune system. So I wonder why they closed us down, because our retreat, and it's so good to hear that Weimar is, I think, only 15 minutes away, where they have programs, health programs, they also have programs for mental health. These retreats, with their juicing days and exercise and steam saunas, are the best immune system best immune system boosters that there are. And what I'm going to do tonight, I'm going to show you what your immune system is. I'm also going to show you how you can boost it. And we're also going to have a look at what weakens it. Because when you look at the immune system, look at actually what it does in the body and what boosts it and what weakens it, then you can see without a doubt that our body was designed to heal itself. So what makes the most sense is to work with those processes that God put in the body for our body to heal. Now, our front line of defense is actually the skin. We don't often think of the skin as of being a front line of defense, but it is. The skin protects the inside environment of the body. And that's why whenever the skin is broken, whether it be a cut, whether it be graze, it's important to clean it as quickly as possible and to cover it, because you've actually just lost your front line of defense. Well, let's have a look at some of the avenues through this front line of defense. We'll start at the head. And you'll notice that in the head, there are seven holes or seven avenues of access to the inside of the body. Two ears, two eyes, two nostrils, and a mouth. So let's look at the ear. In the ear, you've got the eardrum. And the eardrum very successfully basically protects the inside of the body. And it's made out of an incredible substance because it breathes and also we can hear. But if anything goes into the ear canal, there's wax in there, there's little hairs that actually trap and prevent anything going further. And if it goes further, then we've got the eardrum. And the best way to clean the ear is please don't put anything in there. You call it Q-tips, we call it earbuds. You will not find one in my house, because it's not very safe putting those in the ear, because that eardrum is delicate and it can be damaged. And often when the Q-tip goes in, it just pushes the wax further in. One of the best ways is just to put your head on the side and let the hot shower go in there to soften the earwax, and then wiggle the earlobe, and please don't put anything in that ear. Now we go to the eye, and there's a line of defense there. And believe it or not, one of the first line of defenses is the bones around it, because if something were to hit, the bones actually stop anything big going in, because the eye is sunken a little bit. But if it's a little bit smaller and it tries to get in the eye, we have the blinking reflex and the eyelashes prevent. But if it actually happens to get through that, then we've got the eye that is coated with a mucousy substance, and if it is a bug or a bit of dust, it gets trapped in that mucus, and we only have to look around the world a few times and it'll push it down to the corner of the eye and we flick it out. It's an amazing line of protection is in the eye. Let's go to the nose now, in the nostrils. In the nostrils, there are little half caves. And if we breathe something in that has dust on it or anything on it making the air heavy, you see, if we breathe in pure air through the nose, it's light and it goes straight to the back, into the trachea, down into the lungs. But if it has any dust on it, it's a little heavy. And what happens then? It ricochets backwards and forwards from little cave, half cave to other half cave. And also you've got the hairs there. And we've looked at this a few times, that breathing through the nose purifies the air. And this is the one of the ways that the air is purified, is the hitting backwards and forwards to knock off that little particle of dust. And then at the end of the day, we blow our nose. And you've got mucus in there that can also trap. So it's an amazing process just in the nostril. And if you happen to breathe something in that didn't get purified in the air, then you've got little hairs all lining down into the in the trachea, down into the bronchioles. And if something does go in, there's the coughing reflex, isn't there, to actually cough it up, and the mucus lines there. Well, what about the mouth? And we've talked about this a few times, that nose purifies the air, humidifies the air, and warms the air, but mouth does not do that. Mouth does not purify the air. Remember this, nose is for breathing, that's all. It's for breathing in and out. Mouth is for eating and for drinking and for talking and for singing and for whistling and playing wind instruments. But nose, and nose alone, is for breathing. And that air needs to be purified. When we looked at the heart, we even looked at how breathing in and out through the nose actually can open the blood vessels, causing vasodilation. So what if something goes into the mouth? Maybe like when I was at a friend's house one day and her teenage daughter was patting the dog and then stood up and made the salad. Didn't wash the hands. And dogs that are meat eaters, cats that are meat eaters, they carry parasites, they carry all sorts of nasties. I was doing a live blood analysis. I used to do a live blood analysis when I was the health director at Misty Mountain Health Retreat. It's taking a drop of blood, putting it on a glass slide under the microscope, then it comes up on the screen and you have a look at the red and white blood cells. And I did it on this girl one day, she's about 30, and I saw this little parasite. And I kept scrolling around following this parasite. I said, do you have any animals in your home? She said, I sleep with four cats every night. I said, well, look what they're giving you. Please keep the animals out of the bedroom, out of the kitchen. They're not clean animals. That's what they carry. Anyway, let's say I'm having lunch at this lady's place and her daughter's just patted the dog and made the salad. Well, I'm so glad I've got a line of defense in my gastrointestinal tract. After the break, we're going to go on our journey through the gastrointestinal tract. So what is the line of defense that's in our gastrointestinal tract? It's hydrochloric acid. Hydrochloric acid, if one drop goes on your skin, it would burn a hole in your skin. And hydrochloric acid is a very strong antimicrobial agent. And that's why dogs can micro, I think an O got missed there. That's why dogs can eat rotten things, because they've got 10 times the hydrochloric acid that we have. Have you seen what dogs eat? And they live. We have hydrochloric acid. I have never met anyone with too much hydrochloric acid. And if someone says to me, I've got too much acid in my stomach, I said, well, you must be digesting your food very well. Because that's what the acid does, it digests the food. And as we'll find out in our next lecture, I say, well, how do you know you've got too much? Well, it keeps coming up. Well, the problem's not the acid. The problem's the little gate. That's the problem. No, our hydrochloric acid should be nice and strong. Number one, because we need it to break our protein down. And number two, it's our front line of defense in our gastrointestinal tract. I also mentioned that our gastrointestinal tract is a hollow tube, and anything that goes into that hollow tube is not part of you or me till it gets broken down to tiny substances absorbed out of the gut and into the blood, then it becomes part of you or me. No, the hydrochloric acid is antimicrobial, but I have met many people with low hydrochloric acid. Why? And remember, where is our resident why? Newton's third law of motion states that to every action there is an equal and an opposite reaction. In other words, there is always a reason. Why would someone have low hydrochloric acid? Because they're exhausting their gastric enzymes, of which hydrochloric acid is one. By eating all day long, they water down their hydrochloric acid because they're drinking with meals. Are you getting better at drinking between meals? They also eat the largest meal at the end of the day. A lot of Australians do that. And so when the stomach should be sleeping, poor old stomach's got to work hard, but it doesn't work very hard because everybody else is asleep, so it plods away. Stress, anxiety also depletes hydrochloric acid. And so if the hydrochloric acid levels are low, this bacteria, yeast, that may be on the food, it actually survives the stomach. But God, in his wisdom and mercy, put another line of defense, lining our gastrointestinal tract, a villi. And up the middle of the villi is a lacteal. And a lacteal is part of our lymphatic system. And all through the villi is a blood capillary network. But lining the villi is a thick turf wall. And this thick turf wall is made up of Lactobacillus acidophilus bifidus bacterium, called our microbiome. And this microbiome has an important role to play in digestion. This microbiome is responsible for the final breakdown of our food, which we will look at in our next class. This microbiome is responsible for the absorption of our nutrients out of our gut and into the blood. This microbiome plays a role in the nourishment of the cells that line the gastrointestinal tract. But the one we're particularly looking at in our immune system, it plays a protection role. It protects the blood, protects the inside of the body from any harmful pathogens that might get through. So our microbiome plays many roles, and we're going to define them more in our gut journey in the next class. But the one I particularly want to look at now is the role that it plays in our immune system. When we were in our mother's utero, our gut was sterile. Do you know what that means? No microbiome. And when we were born, we were literally showered with our mother's microorganisms. That's why it's vital that a pregnant woman maintain or ensure that she's got a good microbiome, because her microbiome is the main influencer in the microbiome that her baby will receive. I was watching a documentary on microbiome, and they were interviewing an obstetrician. He was in his late 70s. He said, "We always thought God made a mistake putting the birth canal and the anus so close." He said, "To the point that 50 years ago, if a woman came in labour, we would give her an enema. We would give her an enema to clean out her bowel, because we don't want anything coming out of that little canal as the baby comes out the birth canal. He said, we now know it's a perfect design. Because when the birth canal stretches open, guess what else stretches open? It's right next door. And so when the baby's born and the face hits the air and the baby goes, what's the baby breathing in? The air from the next canal. Notice what the obstetrician commented. He said, we now know it's a perfect design. So those first few breaths are taking in some of the microbiome. And of course the baby's swallowing. And the swallowing takes it down to the gut. But also, in fact, babies should be put to the breast within the first hour of life. The first half hour after the birth is the most important time for a few reasons. Because when the baby is born, the sucking reflex is strongest in that first half hour. And when the baby sucks the mother's nipple, it stimulates the release of the afterbirth. That's important. But also, the baby's getting colostrum. See, the milk doesn't come in for 3 days. In that first 3 days after birth, there's a thick, yellow, creamy substance called colostrum, which is rich in microbiome. So for the establishment of the baby's immune system, this microbiome is vital. 70% of our immune system is basically established by our microbiome. Hippocrates, called the father of medicine, 400 years BC, he said all disease begins in the gut, and he didn't know the details of what I'm showing you here. Our microbiome. How important is that? So what kills it? Because it sounds like it's pretty important. What kills it off? Antibiotics do a great job. One writer explained it like this. He said, taking an antibiotic is like dropping an atomic bomb in the gut. What did the atomic bomb kill? The good and the bad alike. The other day when we were looking at what can kill off any harmful pathogens in our body, we talked about garlic, olive leaf extract, grapefruit seed extract, oregano oil, you call it oregano oil. Do you know that they all are anti-pathogenic, but they don't kill off the good guys? Because Psalm 104, verse 14, the Bible says, God gave herbs, remember, for the service of man. They don't kill the good guys. they only kill the enemy. That's the good news. But the antibiotic, it just comes in. Remember what drugs are like? They're like robots. Get out of my way. I've got a job to do, whether you need it or not. And it kills the good and the bad. It doesn't actually make a difference between what bacteria it is. And so what's happening is the Lactobacillus acidophilus, the bifidus bacterium, starts to get knocked off. What also causes a breakdown in this microbiome is the statin drugs. When we looked at the heart, we looked at the fact that it is not cholesterol that's causing heart disease, it's damage to the arterial walls, which demands cholesterol to repair it. And cholesterol-lowering medication can be stopped immediately. I've known people that have been on it for 10 years and they've just stopped cold turkey. Actually, there is a side effect. Your memory will return. Because that's one of the side effects of cholesterol-lowering medication. I've talked to several chemists. They said, you're right. That is one drug that can be just stopped. Whereas panic attack medication, antidepressants, prednisones, cortisones, well, that's different. That has to be eased off very slowly. The statin drugs also kill off the microbiome. Long-term painkillers, methamphetamines, they kill off the microbiome. So once you've killed off the microbiome, you've now got a compromise in the final breakdown, you've got a compromise in the absorption of nutrients, you've got a compromise in the nourishment of the cells that line, and you've also now compromised your protection. So if hydrochloric acid's low and the pathogenic bacteria gets past the stomach, we've got another line of defense. But if that's broken down in places, then it can get through and into the blood. Now it's in the blood. God did all he could to protect. Many people are sick through ignorance, not realizing that some of the things they are doing are knocking off their front line of defense. Chemotherapy is very dangerous because it's cytotoxic. You know what cytotoxic means? It's a poison to cells. It's a poison to the microbiome. I did a live blood analysis one day on a lady who'd just finished a series of chemotherapy. I saw no white blood cells in her blood. None. Eesh. The good news is, after being at our retreat for a week, I looked at her blood again and they were reviving. We live in an incredible body with an inbuilt ability to heal itself when it's given the right conditions. So now what's going to happen? It's got into the blood. We've got another line of defense. And this line of defense is the white blood cells. The Bible says that the life of the flesh is in the blood. That's in Leviticus 17:11. Why is the life of the flesh in the blood? Because of red blood cells. Your red blood cells are the carriers of the oxygen. Your red blood cells are the carrier of nutrients. Red blood cells are the carriers of water. And the red blood cells also carry away the waste. We're living machinery, and in all machinery, you've got a waste. But the blood is also called the life of the flesh because it's the carrier of white blood cells. So let's have a look at the white blood cells, which I think most people consider their immune system, and certainly it's an important part of the immune system. We have five white blood cells, and one is neutrophils. And neutrophils make up approximately 65% of your white blood cells. So if ever you have an ingrown fingernail or toenail, or you have a splinter and you haven't done anything about it, and you get up the next day and it's all red and it's got pus, you know what the pus is? Dead neutrophils. Neutrophils can actually get out of the blood and into the tissues. There's a communication network where the neutrophils go exactly where they're needed. And what the neutrophils do is they surround the pathogenic bacteria and they kill it with hydrogen peroxide. Did you know that your white blood cells have hydrogen peroxide? And they kill it, and in the process they die, and then the waste basically is pus. Another white blood cell is lymphocytes, and the lymphocytes make up 20%. The lymphocytes are the scouts. They're the ones that are zooming around looking for any problems. And whenever they see a problem, they message the neutrophils, and then the neutrophils come because they're the main killers. Lymphocytes are made in your lymphatic system, especially your lymph nodes under your arms, in your neck, in your groins are the main lymph nodes where the lymphocytes are made. Also, there's monocytes. And the monocytes, they make up 10% of your white blood cells. And the monocytes, they're basically the carriers away of the waste. They're the cleanup team. See, sometimes if someone has an earache and we suggest a cooked onion poultice, and if there's a cooked onion poultice, sometimes in the morning a little hole has been made and pus comes out. And that's good. We've got to get rid of the waste. And what is the pus? It's just your dead neutrophils doing a great job. But sometimes we've seen an earache just resolve and no hole in the eardrum, no pus comes out. Maybe it was fairly mild, and so the dead neutrophils can be taken away by the monocytes through the bloodstream, and then they're dumped into the kidneys to be urinated out, into the colon to be eliminated that way. And often the lymphatic system can sweep the waste away, put it into the blood, and then it'll drop it out through the sweat glands, the kidneys, or the colon. It's an amazing system. Basophils are another white blood cell. They make up approximately 3%, and eosinophils. Eosinophils make up approximately 2% of your white blood cells. And it's basophils and eosinophils that rise whenever there's an allergy. And when I used to look at the live blood analysis, you could pick out the different white blood cells because they're different shapes. But the basophils and the eosinophils, because I used to look at the blood with a black background, it was dark field background. And so the basophils and the eosinophils, they light up like little bright lights. They're like little lights in the blood. And you should only see about 3% basophils, maybe 2% eosinophils. And inside the eosinophils, let's say it looks like this, and this is about the size of the red blood cells. And inside, there are all these little dots jumping around in the nucleus. There are these little dots. Those little dots that are jumping around are histamine granules. So when someone has an allergy and eosinophil levels rise, the histamine levels rise. And if someone has an allergy, what does the doctor give them? Antihistamines. But what's not often addressed is why are the inner eosinophils high? And I found that the most common allergens, the most common causes for rise in eosinophil was an allergy to dairy and to wheat. They were the two most common. And I also discovered that when someone has an allergy to dairy, they usually have it to wheat as well. So I was looking at a lady's blood one day. She's about 38. And what I find is if someone's got, say, 6 eosinophils in that blood, drop of blood, they're usually sensitive to wheat and dairy. If they've got about 10, they're usually gluten intolerant. If they've got about 20, they're celiac. So the amount of eosinophils would indicate. But you don't have to have a live blood analysis to do that. Just symptoms tell you. I always saw it before I even looked at the blood, I could tell. So this girl, she had 21 eosinophils. But I already knew because she had rashes, she had diarrhea, she had bloating. And I said, aha, it looks like you're celiac. She said, yes, I know. But I like wheat, so I eat it. Now, I was reading a book on the gut recently, and this doctor maintained the only way you can find out if you're celiac is to biopsy of the colon. But I do not agree with that at all. Whenever you do a biopsy, you know you're damaging tissues. Personally, I would never have a biopsy. There's no need to know. Your symptoms are telling you there's a problem, so they're just you implement what you need to do to resolve that problem. You have a biopsy, then it just can further complicate the problem. So this girl said, yeah, I know. Then I looked at her husband's blood. He had 21 eosinophils, and I said, well, look at that. He said, oh, what a load of rubbish. He said, I don't have rashes. I don't have diarrhea. And she looked at him and she said, yeah, but you fall asleep in the restaurant. Do you know, one of the most common symptoms of an intolerance to wheat is brain fog, bloating, tiredness. What's a 38-year-old guy doing falling asleep in a restaurant? It's one of the reasons why many people are falling asleep in the afternoon, because they've had sandwiches for lunch or a pasty or a pie, which is all wheat, or a pizza. We had a Fijian family. They used to work, you know, but they had six kids, and I think nearly all the kids worked for us at one time, and they all had a dairy and a gluten intolerance. And one of them, if she had it, she just was covered in eczema. Another one, if he had it, he'd be yawning all day, falling asleep all day. I used to say, "Zach, are you eating wheat?" And he'd go, I could tell. He's yawning, falling asleep, forgetting things. I said, "Zach, my friends blame the fact that they're 50. What do you blame?" The other sister, she'd get diarrhea. So I thought, isn't this interesting? In this family, everyone had slightly different symptoms when they ate the wheat and the dairy. One lady told me that she's a fifth generation dairy farmer. And she said, "All my kids have dairy. I had dairy." But she said, "I had one son that could not handle it. So he just got terrible diarrhea." Why so? Because her husband was not a fifth generation dairy farmer, and this boy got the husband's genes. So she said, "We just got a goat." He had goat's milk, rest of us had cow's milk. You got to do what works. And I've spoken to a couple of pediatricians, and whenever they get a child that's got eczema or asthma, they take them off the dairy and put them on the goat's milk. Well, have a look at the baby goats. Very similar in size to the baby human, isn't it? But look at the size of the baby cow. I mean, within a year, they're the same size as their mother. They grow very fast. So these white blood cells can certainly be strengthened, and they can certainly be weakened. But that's our line of defense in our blood. And if someone has a cold or a fever and you do a live blood analysis, you'll see nearly twice as many white blood cells. Not a problem. We need that many when we're sick. One of the best ways to boost that is a fever. In fact, fever treatments have been used for centuries all through Europe. And I know that the health retreat at Eden Valley, they use fever treatments as a part of healing the body from some serious diseases. Because when you raise body temperature, you stimulate the bone marrow to make more red and white blood cells, because that's where the red and white blood cells are made, is in the bone marrow. I know at Misty Mountain Health Retreat, our guests do a steam sauna every afternoon. So they go in this room where you've got steam pumping in, and they first sit in the steam, which would be approximately, they're in there for maybe 10 minutes. I just say to people, stay as long as you can. The only part of the body that doesn't like getting hot is the brain. So we give our guests a bowl of cold water with a washer, face cloth, and they just pat the head. And then after 10 minutes, they go and dive into the mountain stream. And if someone's not agile enough, we have great big showers outside of cold water. What cold does is it equalizes the circulation and it prevents chilling. And again, keeps that head nice and cool. And then they come back into the steam sauna. So the first steam sauna, maybe they're hot into about half an inch. The second one, maybe they're hot into maybe an inch. And then they go and dive in the cold plunge or hot cold shower, and then come back into the steam sauna. We usually do it three times, so that's going for about three quarters of an hour, 45 minutes. By the third hot, their core body temperature is hot. So that'd be getting up to maybe 41, 42. I think that's looking at your 100, 101 Fahrenheit, something like that. So we're creating a fever. You know, fever's a wonderful thing. And how I know as a psychiatric nurse, I trained as a psychiatric nurse, but I also worked in operating theatre, post-op, pre-op. So we were trained in basic surgical procedures. And if ever a patient got a fever, it was almost like, oh no, this is terrible. We'd give them Panadol, I think you call it Tylenol, anything to get that fever down. But why have they got a fever? Do you know the body was created to heal itself, and one of the most powerful ways to boost healing is a fever. Because the bone marrow now is making more red and white blood cells. So these are some things to remember with a fever. A fever is your friend. Got that? And the reason the fever is your friend is it because it has a purpose. So what's the fever's purpose? The fever's purpose is to burn any pathogens in the body that high heat can kill the bacteria. And when all the rubbish is burnt up, the fire will go out. Let it do its job. But there's something more very important to realize. What puts fires out? What does the fire truck have in abundance? Water. Water puts the fire out. So water puts the fire out. So how do we use water? We use water in. So if ever my babies had a fever, I used to just let them breastfeed as much as they want. I wanted to keep them well hydrated. The only time the brain suffers in a fever is if the brain's dehydrated. Usually I would just feed my babies maybe 3 hourly, maybe 2.5 hourly, but if they had a fever, every half hour I just kept putting them on. I wanted to keep that brain well hydrated, and I never had a problem with any of my babies having fevers. They just sleep, and if they're getting too hot, then I'd put them in not a hot bath, not a cold bath, but a tepid bath. A tepid bath, bath is basically lukewarm, and I'd squeeze the water over them. And what that water does is it pulls the heat out of the body. Often if someone's uncomfortable with a fever, it's because the body can't get rid of the heat quick enough. And what water is the best carrier of hot and cold, and it'll pull that heat out of the body. And if they heat up again in another hour, what do? Put them back in. Because remember, the fire will go out when it's done its job. It has a purpose. People fear fevers. I look at fevers as a wonderful thing. A man rang me up. Well, he emailed me. He said, Barbara, I'm just so stressed out. He said, my little 18-month-old's got a fever. We've taken her to emergency. Why would you go to emergency? We've never taken our babies or children to emergency when they have a fever. But you see today that people are rushing there for the slightest little thing. And what are they going to do there? Give you Tylenol. So they're given Tylenol, went home, the fever went down. 4 hours later, guess what happens? Fever comes back because it hasn't done its job. And this man said, I'm so stressed out, I don't want to give my baby Tylenol anymore, but I have to keep giving the baby Tylenol because the fever keeps coming back. I said, let the fever do its job. Just keep that baby well hydrated. Keep that little one well hydrated. Get fancy straws, let them suck on ice. Put a bit of fruit juice in the ice blocks, but anything to get that water in. Just keep squeezing, even get a little syringe, keep squeezing it into their mouth, and every time they look at you, smile, smile, smile. Don't let them see you worried. Don't let them see that. Even if you're crying, smile. A smile tells the little one it's all right. Because eventually it will go out. I said to this man, I had 6 babies. I didn't give any of them We call it Panadol, Tylenol. And they all had fevers. And guess what? They're all still alive. It's a very natural process. Every baby, every child in the whole world has had a fever. Let it do its job. So when I told him that, he said, all right, I'll try. He said, but what if I put the little one in the bath and an hour later she's hot again? I said, put him back in the bath. Put them back in the bath. You're not going to be doing this forever. You might do it for 24, you might even do it for 48 hours, but it'll pass. And that baby, that little one, that person will be stronger for the fever because it's one of the best immune system boosters. So he did it. And 24 hours later, he emailed me, said, thank you, the fever's gone. That's because you let it do its job. So what can you do to boost your immune system? To boost your immune system, one of the easiest ways to do it is to finish every hot shower with cold. Just that quick cold gives a wonderful boost. Or you can dive into the American River every morning. Might be a little bit of a traffic jam there this tomorrow morning, although I haven't seen anyone else. But that quick cold plunge, it's worth experiencing it. And remember, you're not in there long, and make sure you've got some nice warm clothes to put on when you get out. As you're walking away, your whole body's just, it's almost like you've had an injection of power, that quick cold. One lady said, Barbara, you tell us we've got to listen to our bodies, and my body says don't have a cold shower after the hot. I said, we will never want to because we're warm-blooded creatures. But how do you feel after the cold plunge? How do you feel after you've had the cold shower? One young man said to me, who was having coffee every day for his morning boost, he said, and he heard about the dangers of caffeine, and he said, I have found something more effective than a cup of coffee to give me a boost in the morning. I said, what's that? He said, I finished my hot shower with cold. Whew. And yet you don't get the down that the coffee gives. There's another way that you can boost the immune system. In the Sustain Me principles, we've got sunshine. Did you know lying in the sun will boost your immune system? Because that sun penetrates very, very deep, even down into the bone marrow. Did you know keeping well hydrated is vital? Because your blood is your carrier of the water, and we are the ones that supply the water. Sleep. While you sleep, that's when your batteries are recharged. When you sleep, that's when your body's going into the repairing everything ready for the next day. There's a whole lot of processes that happen while you sleep. Your immune system is being re-established while you sleep. It can't do it while you're working in the day because it's too busy running the human body, but while you sleep, it's like you've placed your body on nature's operating table. Trusting God, when you're stressed, when you're anxious, that has a blocking effect on your immune system. When you're relaxed, even when things are going all wrong, do you know the Bible says in Proverbs 17:22, a merry heart doeth good like a medicine, but a broken spirit dries up the bones. What's made in the bones? Our immune system. So relax, laugh. Did you know children laugh 125 times a day? So should we. My little grandson, Sonny, when he was 3, his mother put him to bed and then he called her. She said, what's the matter? He said, Mum, I've just found a new laugh. She said, well, what is it? And he went, that was his new laugh. We should laugh more. I remember my 10-year-old granddaughter Amy was looking out the window one day laughing. I came up. I don't know what she was laughing at. I said, "What are you laughing at?" She said, "Look at Pa's truck. There's a shovel stuck on the back of it." She thought that was very funny. Do you know, children have this lovely, relaxed way about them. We should laugh more. And the proverb is right. A merry heart doeth good like a medicine to your immune system, but a broken spirit dries up the bones, inhibits the production of your immune system. A lady emailed me one day. She said, "My son, he's 5. I don't know what's going on. He stopped eating. He's just in bed." I wrote back and said, "He's probably got a cold, or he's probably just not feeling well. Let him sleep." She wrote back, she said, "I've taken him to emergency." They said, "There's nothing wrong with him." "That's right. That's right." She said, "I've got an appointment to see a gastroenterologist. I think he's got pancreatitis." I said, "What?" I said, "Where'd that come from?" I said, "I would not take him to the specialist." I said, "He's got a cold." She said, "But he's not eating." I said, "That's what happens when you're sick. You don't feel like food." And then I felt very impressed to say something else. I said, "When you go into his room, don't frown." See, when we go into the sick room of a child and we're like this, what does the child think? "There must be something terribly wrong with me." You know what you do? You go in and you smile. "Mum, I feel sick." "I know, sweetheart, but you live in an incredible body. You might have a couple of days of down, but you'll be all right in a few days." Smile, 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 smile. Smile, smile. She emailed me back 2 days later, "He's better. Thank you." She didn't take him to the specialist. Oh, these poor specialists, you know, what are they going to do? They look at the child and they know this child should be home in bed. I know when I got COVID, a double-vaxxed man attended our program. And on the second day, when the staff knocked on his door to wake him up, he said, "Oh, I've had a headache all yesterday, and I just tested myself. I'm positive for COVID." He said, "I'll stay in my room." So we just brought drinks to him. But meanwhile, he had successfully given COVID to half the staff and half the guests. And my husband came down first, and then 24 hours later, I came down. I had a terrible headache for the first 24 hours. Then I got a high fever. I never take my temperature. Is there any need? You can just feel that the person's hot. That's all you need to know. Huh? I don't even have a thermometer in my house. It's quite obvious the person's hot. So I just laid in bed, just slept. If I got uncomfortably hot, I'd have not a hot shower, not a cold shower, just a cool shower. I drank a huge amount of water. And I just slept. And I think at the end of the first day, by 4 o'clock, I was hungry. I ate a banana. And I slept all night. So I basically I read about 2 books in those 48 hours. I basically stayed in bed. Woke up the third day, fever gone, headache gone, just tired. No wonder. Do you know when you have a fever, it's like you've climbed a mountain. And I hadn't eaten much, so of course I'm tired. So the fourth day, if I laid down for half an hour, I could do something for 10 minutes. Then the fifth day, if I laid down for 10 minutes, I could do something for half an hour. And then the sixth day, felt fantastic, jumping out of my skin. People say, did you take zinc? Did you take vitamin C? Did you take ivermectin? I said, no, I did nothing. Because I know I live in a body that's got an inbuilt ability to heal itself. And you know what it just needed me to do? Lay on the body's, lay on nature's operating table, which is go to bed. Get an interesting book. That's all I felt like doing. I drank a lot of water. I hardly ate a thing because I live in a body that can do it. And the reason it can do it is because every other day I have sunshine, maybe not much today. I drink adequate water. I go to bed early. I surrender my life to God every day and ask for divine help. I don't take anything into the body that will harm it. And that's the abstain. What happens with abstain and why it's an important part is there are some things that should never enter the human body. That's why I don't believe in drug therapy and I don't take any drugs. Because drugs never heal. They're aliens to the body. Yes, I allowed my body to take painkillers when I was in the most excruciating pain and the doctor pulled my broken radius back into place, but that was one day. One day in 70 years, okay? The body can handle that. I knew that my body would be able to heal because I breathe through my nose. I eat nourishing food. I do all the good things in moderation and I exercise every day. So when you maintain the body with its maintenance program, when you do go down, the body can heal. And you just let it do its job. So the white blood cells, they were boosted by my fever. And I knew that. I was so tired. So what do you do when you're tired? You just lay down. I knew why I was tired. And my body recovered. How do I know it was COVID? Did I have a test? No, don't want to have a test either. But my husband did. Because he knew that if he tested positive, because, you know, in 2021, if you tested positive, then you got an exemption for a while. And that's the reason he did it. Remember what Trump said, if you want to lower the numbers, stop testing everyone. And you know those tests, they just test positive for a virus. They don't actually define the COVID. Anyway, that's a whole other subject and we've got better things to talk about. So I had a mother and her son, he was 7, come and see me a few years ago. I was in New Zealand and I was seeing the mother, but the little boy came with her because he wasn't going to school. And he came in like this, holding his finger like that. My eyes went straight to the finger. The finger was twice the size. It was red. It had white topping. It was sealed. I said, what happened to the finger? Because you don't just wake up and the finger looks like that. Something has happened. She said, it's cellulitis. Well, that's pretty obvious. What's cellulitis? Inflammation of the cell. Yep, we can tell that. I said, but something must have happened. She said, well, he had a blister. The blister broke and he was playing in the dirt with his matchbox cars. So what's going to happen now? Dirt. Get in. Do you know it's an amazing system? When dirt gets in, the lymphocytes are alarmed. The lymphocytes go to the neutrophils. It stimulates the lymphatic system. It's like the SWAT team goes to that finger. It swells up with the lymphatic fluid. The pus is the dead neutrophils there. Whoa, they're working hard. But it's so swollen, it's very painful. I said, what have you been doing? She said, he's on his second course of antibiotics. I'd hate to see the finger if he wasn't on any, but I didn't think it could get much worse. And what's the definition of insanity? Do what you've always done, expect different results. Well, 10 days antibiotics and it looks like that. And she said he's on painkiller medication and he's on sleeping tablets to sleep every night and he's 7. I'm not criticising the lady. She didn't know what else to do. And when she went to the doctor, he just gave more medication and more antibiotics. I said, can I try something? She said, please. So what I did was I got two mugs, and in one mug, I filled it up with hot water. Now, when you put your body into a hot bath, especially if you're a little cool, have you noticed tingling? Because when you apply hot water to the body, it has a stimulating effect. So what is it stimulating? It's actually stimulating blood. That's what's it's stimulating. And what happens when you stimulate blood? Now more oxygen, more nutrients, more water, more waste taken away, more white blood cells. But after 3 minutes, that stimulating effect slows down. So when you have your hot shower tonight, just notice when you first get in, it'll be tingle, tingle, tingle. Because you might be a little cool, because it's cold out there. But you'll notice after 3 minutes, it's slowing down. So what I did, I got two mugs, and he put the finger into hot. But after 3 minutes, it slows down. So I have another mug. I don't know, do you call it a mug, a cup? And I put cold water in it and some ice cubes and put the finger into there. Sorry, it's not a very good picture. See, when you apply cold to the body, it certainly has a stimulating effect. So if you're brave enough to dive into the River America, you'll go like this. Maybe you won't, I do. It has a stimulating effect. You don't stay in there long. But it only takes 30 seconds to get to the slowing down. I don't stay in long. I just want the stimulating effect. So before the hot has time to slow down, we only keep it in there 3 minutes. And then as it starts to slow down, we put it in the cold and with a few ice cubes. And how long do we keep it in the cold? 30 seconds. We're stimulating. Before it's got time to slow down, what do? Back in the hot. While it's in the cold, we put a little bit of boiling water in there to keep it hot. And we do this 3 times. Because after 3 times, the body gets a little bit exhausted. Because we're really moving things. What are we moving? We're moving blood. In fact, the blood has everything that finger needs. More white blood cells, more oxygen, more nutrients, more water. And as the fresh blood comes in under the stimulating effect of hot and cold water, the old blood is driven away. Did you know that nurses used to learn hydrotherapy? I have the Nurse's Hydrotherapy book by Abbott. And it was the textbook that nurses used to learn. They used to do this in hospitals. Why has it stopped? Because it takes too much time. It's much easier to give a tablet. I met a lady who was a nurse. She was in her 80s and she trained in Sydney at the Seventh-day Adventist Hospital. She said, we learned hydrotherapy, water therapy. Takes time, but actually it doesn't take very long. How long did that take? 15 minutes? Do you know, by the second hot, that little boy started smiling. By the end, after the third hot, you always finish with cold because cold equalizes circulation, prevents chilling. He had a big smile on his face. His whole body was relaxed. I would like to suggest that he experienced 50% pain relief in 15 minutes. How long does painkilling medication take to kick in? Half an hour, 40 minutes? And that painkilling medication is toxic to that seven-year-old kidneys, the seven-year-old liver, the seven-year-old's microbiome. And all I did was that. And then when I finished, I grated up about a teaspoon of potato, wrapped it in a cloth, put that on the finger, wrapped it in plastic, bandaged or taped it on, asked God to bless it. And that little boy just sat there smiling at me for the rest of the time. When he got home, they did it again. We did it at 11 in the morning, did it again at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. In the evening, had a hot shower, took it all off, did another hot and cold, fresh grated potato. When that little boy woke up in the morning and they took it off, his finger was back to normal. And all the waste had come out. When she took the grated potato, pulled us off, it was a bit of a mess. That's why keeping it in a package is easy, you just discard it. No need for antibiotic, no need for painkilling medication, no need for sleeping tablets. He had the best night's sleep he'd had for 10 days, just with alternating hot and cold water. How easy is that? Hydrotherapy, this alternating hot and cold, has been used for centuries. And in the area of pain relief, it is without equal. Not only that, that alternating hot and cold was boosting that little boy's bone marrow to make more red and white blood cells, boosting his immune system. So simple. So to boost your immune system, the Sustain Me principles will do that. And start practicing turning that hot tap off. Well, you have a tap that you just turn all the way on, don't you? And then you turn it almost off and you have the cold. And your cold is cold. The good news is it's brief. If you can't handle 30 seconds, start with 10. But it's the best booster of the immune system. Your summer's coming. This is a good time to get used to it, ready for next winter. Your blood is your immune system. That's why the Bible says in Leviticus 17:11, the life of the flesh is in the blood. The immune system of the body is in the blood. So make sure you're breathing through your nose so it's got lots of oxygen to carry. Make sure you're having a nourishing diet, organic as much as possible, high fiber, generous protein, great fats. Make sure you're drinking adequate water. Make sure your bowels are working well so the waste can be taken away. And use the water. Use the water internally and externally. What an incredible body we live in, with its inbuilt ability to heal itself. And that's why if ever I get sick, which is rare, I love doing nothing. Because I live in a body that can heal itself. Yes, if you take echinacea, yes, if you take garlic, yeah, you can do all that and that'll boost it along, but I actually like doing nothing. Except simple water treatments, which actually will boost my body to do more.